You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Welcome back to the Best Practice Show. My name is Kirk Barrett, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over. And if you've been paying attention to the world of continuing education, you hear things like airway, you hear about growth, function, transverse dimension, and I have one of the world experts in this area of how the face is supposed to work, Dr. Michael Gunson, who is a Spear Education faculty member, and Rouse, I got him. So you didn't think I'd get him on the show. So I got him. And Becca, I'm so grateful for you making the introduction. So you're going to love this. Do me a favor. Stick around, grab a pen, hit the share button. You're going to enjoy this in this particular podcast. Before we get started, I always like to say this for any of you new listeners. I was telling Dr. Gunson, I have no idea how this works. I'm 51. I'm probably not supposed to know how this works, but you guys are listening to audio. I thought it would be video, but no, podcasting is like the new blogging. So number one, we're just grateful that you guys are here. So we've had over 150,000 audio downloads. That means you guys said yes and put this on my phone. So we enjoy it so much. We're just going to keep doing it. I love doing it. And it's a fun stuff. And our whole goal is this. We just want you to learn and learn how to create a better practice and better life. You're going to see I'm not that smart. That's why I have great people on here and ask them the tough questions. So do me a favor, just hit the subscribe button because we want you to keep showing up. You're going to see every single week, we'll bring you a brand new expert in dentistry. Just ask them the good questions and help you put some information in play and create a better practice and a better life. And then secondly, some of you always ask, like, what do you guys do? We love the education world, but we're practice coaches. And so if you're a practice owner and you're thinking, gosh, I just don't want to work this hard. I work too many days. Give us a call. If you're struggling with team culture or just running the business a little bit more smoothly, that's what we do. Or if you're just tired of giving all these PPOs the write-offs, 35% or 45% off the top, I would say don't do that anymore. So check us out at actdental.com, where we help you create a better practice, a better life. Now, I want to introduce my guest. So Dr. Gunson, this is, you know, in full transparency, you and I have never met before. This is the first time we've actually met. And you are an oral surgeon. And we're going to be talking about a very important topic today. But I always love this. I love for people to know a little bit about you and your story before we go into the topic. So can you just tell us a little bit about who you are and where you practice?
Sure. Yeah. I originally, when I was in college, my goal was to go to medical school. And I went to many practices, medical practices, and talked to a lot of physicians. And what I learned in the 90s was that physicians were angry people. And what I then discovered was that dentists were happy people. And I thought, wow, what is this about? You know, and it was a stark contrast. But then I learned I didn't really want to do dentistry. But then I learned, hey, there's this profession where you can actually do surgery on people's faces, and it's in the dental profession. So, and then I discovered too that you can go to oral maxillofacial surgery and get your MD during the residency. And I thought, okay, well, that's for me. So I went to UCLA Dental School for 4 years, and then stayed on another 6 years for my oral maxillofacial surgery certificate. And from that point, I was then invited by my now retired partner, Dr. Bill Arnett, who is very well known for orthognathic surgery. And I've limited my practice to orthognathic surgery for the last coming up 18 years now here in Santa Barbara, California.
Santa Barbara is secretly one of the most gorgeous. I actually think it's still a secret. It's not so much a secret anymore. Every time I'm there, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's just beautiful. So I didn't know that. I didn't know that you were Arnett's partner. That's so cool. Okay. Yeah. All right, the worlds are colliding. This is so cool.
That's great.
Yeah. So how'd you get involved with Spear Education and Becca Baca? How did those paths intersect?
So I don't know who gets credit. It's either Jeff or Greg. It might be Jeff, but I had an opportunity to lecture at the American Association of Restorative Dentists 1 year. And I think it was Jeff that invited me. And Jeff and I had crossed paths before with Airway during like a Roth Williams orthodontic meeting, I believe it was. And then I guess he liked what he heard. Greg invited me to lecture at the faculty meeting. And from there, I just loved the guys. I loved dentistry. I love dentists. I find it's... I love my profession very much, but for whatever reason, surgeons tend to be really, you know, this is how we do things. And it's hard to get them to not do the things that they do. Dentists just seem to always be on the lookout for what's best, what's better than what they're doing. And they seem to be ravenous for information. So being connected to Spear has been awesome because the desire for information and for what I've learned, what I observe, it's been overwhelming and I love it. So I love sharing. And then I just ran into Rebecca at Seattle Study Club meetings, Spear meetings, and formed a good friendship.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to give Jeff the credit because he'll feel left out. Sorry, Greg. But at the same token, those are just great guys to be with. And even if you weren't in the dental profession and you met those guys, you would just enjoy having a tequila with them or just having fun with them. Just because every time I'm with it, I laugh so hard. I often pinch myself like, this is a work function. It shouldn't be that much fun. And towards the end, we're going to talk about a great course that you and Becca have put together in November. But I want to talk about how the face is supposed to work. Tell us what that means. So that's the title of our podcast today. So tell us a little bit of the why behind that title.
Well, why don't I give you the background? Because it's kind of a discovery. Like, through the years, you know, how do you move a face? You know, how do you move these teeth and these bones doing jaw surgery? And really, my partner was at the forefront of figuring out how to move the teeth and jaws in a way that's aesthetic for the face. Because prior to him, for the most part, people were just going by cephalometric normals, you know, or let's just put the teeth together and that'll make a good face. And that was not true. So in his efforts, he devised a way of measuring and treating a face aesthetically. But as I did that, I discovered, well, you don't always hit the bullseye going by these, you know, standardized, what we call normals. And what I started to discover is that, first off, normal is a bad word. Normal, none of us should be trying to make anything normal. normal is just the average of what has ever been observed. And so if you want to establish a normal position for a patient, then your goals are actually just average, you know? So I was trying to figure out how to get beyond this idea of averages and normals. And two people influenced me. One is an anthropologist named Gregory Bateson, who I studied in undergrad. And the second was actually philosopher. So what Gregory Bateson taught me is he's the father of systems theory. So here's an anthropologist who goes and he lives in Papua New Guinea to observe the indigenous population, so the tribes in that area. And he observed them independently. So these tribes, some of them on one side of the island, don't know that there are other tribes on the other side of the island. Obviously he did. But what he found was, is even though that these tribes may not interact with each other from a selling things standpoint, or interacting even in war or in other, you know, peaceful type of interactions, they influenced each other. And he was able to observe how the actions of one tribe through nature and other aspects influenced these other tribes, even though they mentally, physically didn't have contact with each other. So he took that idea and he developed systems theory, which, I mean, we all use. It's the rage. And so I started thinking systems based. Like, you know, my partner, Dr. Annette, says, so Bill says, put the chin here. This is the location where the chin belongs. So I started asking questions like, well, why? You know, why does the chin belong there? Why does that look good? Because if I understand the why behind it, then I can make adjustment for people who are, quote, not normal or not underneath the bell curve. So I started asking all these why questions. So what I came up with is that that there are some functional keys to the face. In other words, the face has a job to do. And that job is to do three main things. Face needs to eat, it needs to communicate, and it needs to breathe. And what I discovered looking at all kinds of data, all kinds of articles, is that the brain is in charge, and the brain will override just about any aspect of the face in order to accomplish those three goals. So does the brain care that the teeth wear down when somebody chews or talks? No, the brain only cares that we eat and that we communicate. Does the brain care that posture can be deformed and the neck can hurt if growth is incorrect? No, the brain doesn't care if the neck hurts. The brain's actually responsible for the neck hurting as the patient cocks their head forward, has bad posture in order to breathe. So these are just some of the examples of how the brain takes over and then as a result can cause damage with these like adaptations.
Yeah. I'm loving this. I've done this a lot. I don't think I've met a clinical, you know, influencer, put together an anthropologist and a philosopher in a that's very cool. Now, I want you to talk about this because I'm loving this. You guys have also been the pioneers of changing treatment plan. 35 years of treatment planning was turned on its head.
Yeah.
It's no longer four pillars of diagnosis, it's five. So how do those two worlds come together, you know, in your teaching? Give us a little perspective on that and how that's changed just in the last few years.
Yeah. So as far as treatment planning goes, see, this is an interesting point of view from the aspect of like practice management. And I'd have to say that this also came from an aspect of practice management. So in me speaking with my patients and having a connection with my patients, I felt like I was not connecting with them based on, oh, you know, let me just explain to you that your jaw is in the wrong place and we need to put it in the right place. And the patient's like, okay. So the patient has to like believe me at that point.
Right.
That's far different than sitting with a patient and listening to them. What is the problem? Well, my neck hurts, my jaw hurts here. My mom's always yelling at me to stand up straight. I drool, you know, and it's like, yeah, those are, I'm sorry you're going through that. Do you want to know why you're doing those things? You know why? You know why I'm doing it? Yeah, let me explain to you how your growth and development has made it hard for you to keep your spit in your mouth. You know, why has it made it hard for you to do this and to do that? So now all of a sudden, I'm connecting with a patient's story. Like, this is their life story, and I'm connecting with their life story, and they're feeling me connect with that. Like, they're feeling me understand that life story. So that now we're on this like same level. We've joined, you know, stories. So now the question comes up, well, what are we going to do about it? Well, they know that I understand them now, mm-hmm. and they understand me. And so when treatment planning comes into the picture, a couple things have already been established. One is trust, and not just trust, but really empathy, you know, being able to tell somebody, this is why you're experiencing what you're feeling. There's a certain amount of empathy that, and everybody wants that. Everybody wants to feel heard, to feel understood. So empathy is really important. So you've established that trust, but the next thing is the patient actually understands what the problem is. So that when you provide a solution to it, they're like, well, yeah, let's do that.
Right.
You know, it's no longer, oh, well, you know, you have some wear on the mesiobuccal cusp at number 14 and we need to fix that because it doesn't look right. Instead, it's, hey, you've got wear on the mesiobuccal cusp at number 14. Because, you know, your jaw didn't grow the right way. It's sitting off to the side here. And have you ever noticed that when you speak, your lips kind of move in different directions? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I've noticed that. People make fun of me all the time in my family for the way I talk. Well, this is why. Let me show you why.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, there's this big connection. So not only does it help treatment planning, but going back, it actually made my practice of dentistry more exciting, because when you can connect with a patient, man, it's one of the best feelings. And then on the other side, actually coming through and providing the relief of the migraine, providing the breathing that they've never had, and the better posture, and it's so easy to chew, and now their lips are together. You know, a lot of satisfaction, a lot of emotion is attached to those kinds of results.
Yeah, I'm loving this, because this is not the typical conversation I usually have with an oral surgeon. Now, this is not a knock on all. I mean, there are some oral surgeons that this is an important subject, and I think it's important to everybody in dentistry, but I love the perspective that you have on this. And when we talk about how the face is supposed to work, you know, experts say people are going to be living longer. You know, the palate thing has been introduced. Now we've got, you know, kids are being introduced to ADHD medications way earlier in their life. And so this becomes a very important piece. I mean, I'm going to ask you this question. It's kind of a leading question. I mean, I think dentists are more important now than ever in helping people live a long, healthy, functional life. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I agree. And I think, and so the question is, why? Well, number one, a lot of these associations between dental health and physical health have been made through the years, you know, many more and more. I also, though, without slamming anybody in particular, I think as a general rule, I find physicians are generally abdicating certain parts of their role. For example, I don't think I've ever met a physician that enjoys looking in somebody's mouth, let alone diagnostically looking in somebody's mouth. So right. Even the physicians, the sleep physicians, many of them are not open to the relationship of the teeth and the bones and how it affects the airway. It's absolutely ridiculous to think that the airway is not affected by the teeth and the bones, where the airway itself is defined by, you know, the attachments of the orbicularis oris, the buccinator muscles, the buccinators at the raphe connecting to the pharyngeal constrictors. And it's like, yes, the airway is literally defined by the attachments of muscles to the teeth and the bones. So, and it goes back to that systems theory, how Gregory Bateson opened my mind. And I think that medicine, as a result of how they're treated reimbursement wise, either by the government or by insurance, they have been forced to become myopic.
Yeah.
In their approach. Whereas I think dentists, and this is a positive, you know, dentists, they don't always have to rely on government and insurance to tell them how they are supposed to treat their patients.
Right.
And as a result, they can keep the open mind. I mean, how interdisciplinary care, I mean, that is a, you know, outside of an educational hospital, when have you ever heard physicians talk about interdisciplinary care? Like, never, right? I mean, the orthopedic surgeon really doesn't like talking very much to the physical therapist, and yet they have to work together to make their results happen. Instead, it's just, okay, go see the physical therapist. Here's your prescription. Right. Go. Whereas we, you know, I can talk to Rebecca, I can talk to Jeff, I can talk to Greg, you know, and all of my other referrals, my restorative dentist, my orthodontist, and we work together. You know, why is, for example, you know, you look at somebody and you're like, oh, they come from the periodontist, and the periodontist has given me a diagnosis of thin biotype, right? The patient's like, well, what does that mean? Thin biotype? I don't know. My gums are thin, I guess. And so then you look at the CBCT, you show the roots pushing hard on the cortical plate. You see these teeth that are, the crowns are falling in towards the lingual with the roots pushing buccal and labial. It's no wonder that it's a thin biotype. But then what is the thin biotype telling you about this patient? Not just tooth position, but why are these teeth collapsing in? Well, the teeth are collapsing in because maybe the upper jaw is small. Maybe the upper jaw has a transverse developmental problem. And in which case, if it has a transverse problem, it probably has an AP problem.
Yeah.
Well, if the maxilla has a transverse and AP problem, then maybe the airway is small. So, hey, sir, you have thin biotype, but how do you sleep at night? You know, I mean, that's the dentist that's making that, it's following that path and asking those questions. It's unbelievable, but how awesome is it?
It's
awesome. So systems based.
Yeah.
It's so inspiring and it's exciting. I mean, just get, when you take disparate ideas and you connect them the way that they were meant to be, or not even meant to be connected, the way they are connected, it's really exciting. It's like, you know, you play a couple lines from a song, you know, if I said, you know, na 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 na, you're like, oh, for Elise Beethoven, yep. Right? But that's the only part that anybody ever learns on the piano as a kid. But you listen to the whole song, you know, you get towards the end of that piece, and the end of that piece makes sense of the beginning of the piece. And yep. And then you have the piece, and it's exciting. To discover all that stuff.
So I love the path that you're laying out here, and I'm just listening very carefully. I mean, are you suggesting that, hey, look, don't be so focused on the hand? I think as clinicians, we just got to start asking better questions. Like the quality of the question matters, right?
Absolutely. My good friend, restorative dentist in Manhattan, Jeff McClendon, just one of the smartest guys on the planet. That's his mantra. He says, learn to ask better questions. That's what he's always saying. Learn to ask better questions. I agree. And going back to that idea, there's a quote from Gregory Bateson, and it's one that altered my practice completely. And he says, the pathology is not in the thing. It's in the relationship between the things.
Wow.
So you look at it's simple. You look at a cavity. Is that the pathology? No, a carious lesion is not the pathology.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be successful in providing somebody health, then you better treat the system. Otherwise, obviously, there's going to be more cavities, right? Because, you know, you drill and fill, sure, you've stopped the pathological process, but that's just a manifestation of dysfunction in an entire system.
Right.
And that's what's exciting with the face. So, like, where are the lips supposed to be? Where are the chin is, where is it supposed to be? And how do the teeth influence that? So I tell dentists, you know, you can affect lip projection in your patients in ways that you've not considered. And if you do it, you know, patients will turn around and say, like, what did you do to my lips? I love my lips now. And because you have worked within the system and you've worked to help the system accomplish its goals, the real result is a functional result, but also an aesthetic result.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I often teach too, is that our definition of what aesthetic means is defined by our brains. So our brains, we look at somebody, and if their face works the way that it's supposed to, it's pleasing to us.
Yeah.
And why is that? Well, because our genes, we don't want to be sharing our genes with somebody that doesn't work right. That's anti-evolutionary. So our brain's like, no, you know, that face isn't working right. That's not attractive. That's not aesthetic. So genetically, we're programmed to identify what works correctly. And in the end, that's aesthetic. So if the dentist is actually providing this functional outcome, forcibly the outcome is aesthetic.
Yeah.
And patients will love it.
Yeah. Because that was the gap I was going to ask you to fill. So when you talk about, it has three functions. We have to eat, it's got to communicate and breathe. You're one of the few people that doesn't talk, you know, aesthetically, how it looks, fits all together. And there's got to be a reconciliation in there somehow when it comes to the face. Go a little bit deeper on that, because I love that.
Yeah, that's it. So let's take two types of problems, skeletally and dentally. Let's take the class two patient. So the relationship between the lower jaw is behind the upper jaw for whatever reason. There are two main, you know, categories of a class two situation. One is the high angle class two, and the other is the deep bite, the class two deep bite. So can a patient have an aesthetic appearance and still have like a malocclusion? And the answer is, well, yes, if the face is able to perform its function. Right. So let me show you. So a patient who is a class two high angle, the tendency is for the anterior vertical to be too long. And so the patient suffers from an inability to close their lips. And we call it lip incompetence, interlabial gap. So what happens is throughout the day, the patient is making efforts to close their mouth. And so those efforts to close the mouth make for thin lips, make for lines in the lips. It causes the mentalis muscle to bulge and to project. So they get kind of a witch's chin. And then it just doesn't look good to have somebody spend the day, you know, with their mouth slammed together. So here you have a class two high angle where the inabilities to close the mouth is affecting their aesthetic, their function, their airway. They become mouth breathers. I mean, we can take this all the way through. But my point in this is the aesthetic aspect. So in that patient, they have an aesthetic problem, but it's related to the anterior vertical problem. So now let's go to the class two deep bite. When you look at a magazine like Vogue or Bazaar, or, you know, any of these fashion mags, and you look at their the models that appear in them, the most common face is the class two deep bite. And that is because when the face is shorter in the front, with the tooth relationship being class two, that lower jaw rotates up and the lips actually come together and push forward in the face. So what you end up with is you end up with a chin that's further forward because of the rotation, and you end up with lips that are smashed together. So strong chin, protruding lips, that's definitely what they want to see on the covers of their magazines.
Right.
They don't want to see a flat chin as a result of mentalis strain. They don't want to see people with thin lips on the covers as a result of a class two high angle. So is there a health benefit then? A greater health benefit of being a class two deep bite over a class two high angle? Yes, there is, because the lips come together. But what's the trade-off? Trade-off is that oftentimes with a class two deep bite, the lower incisors come in and hit behind the upper incisors, start pounding on the periodontium behind the upper incisors, cause anterior flare of the upper teeth and bone loss around the incisors. So yeah, there's a price for them to pay. There's also the wear of the posterior teeth. They get quite significant posterior tooth wear. So they pay a price long-term with those other aspects. But when you're talking about aesthetics and what we see on the outside, class two deep bite patient, far better off aesthetically. So having presented all that, if you're going to treat somebody, right, would you err then more on the side of a deeper bite? Would you err more on the side of having the lips compressed? Or would you err more on opening the bite and having the lips further apart? Right. So you start analyzing what you're doing in the mouth and where you want to go with your treatments. And if your treatments are leading you into a greater vertical dimension where the lips are starting to separate, maybe you should rethink that, you know, from a functional standpoint. So that's kind of how looking at function, dental classifications that we've had for years and aesthetics can come together to help you make real important clinical decisions. So.
Yeah. And this is powerful stuff. Now I can't stop thinking about this though. Help me with this. If I'm a GP and I'm listening, I'm like, I completely agree. How did you build a team of people that talk about the reality? I mean, you not only have to build an internal team of people that are understanding your vision, but you've got to build a support. You use the word interdisciplinary dentistry. I totally agree with you. I mean, you've got to find like-minded individuals and you've got to work hard at calibrating our vision for where we're going together, right?
Yeah, there's it's all about communication, just as we spoke of about communication with the patient and establishing, you know, my story and the patient's story. That same interpersonal relationship needs to occur with our colleagues. We need to understand where they're coming from, so we have to have listening ears. But at the same time, we have to work with people that are willing to listen to our story as well. And I think that's the beginning. So to find people who are listeners is one of the greatest hurdles in it, well, in life, but in particular in establishing an interdisciplinary team. So it's interesting, like interdisciplinary teams, my teams have all come about by attending meetings. You know, I brought up my buddy, Jeff McClendon. I met him at, what's the name of that group in Arizona that is not Spear? Anyway, I was invited. They do interdisciplinary care. Anyway, we went to this meeting and Jeff was there and we started talking about airway and we started talking about our views of airway and he started interjecting his views of teeth and how they relate and we're listening to each other. We're listening to all these ideas and how they affect, like his ideas, how they affect me, and he's listening to me and how my ideas affect him. That's the start of a team. same thing happens with Becca. I mean, Becca's desire to understand growth and development, how could that not fit with what I'm interested in talking about, right? Some people are like, well, isn't she going to end up preventing, you know, people from having surgery? Well, yes, great. You know, prevent people from having surgery. She can't stop at all. You know, there's certain conditions that will always need surgery eventually, but right. Things that I do in my office, such as speech and evaluating function. So I take speech videos and I evaluate speech and function. Like that has real benefit to Becca, who is looking at, say, a two-year-old who might not be speaking, but how are they holding their lips? Where is their tongue in their mouth? What kind of faces are they making? So that listening, it's almost automatic. It's like, well, I want to work with Becca, right? I want to have patience with Becca. So what I found is that docs who listen, you find them in meetings, you know, especially these interdisciplinary meetings, and you got to go out and have dinner and have lunch and sit next to them and talk to them and discuss these kinds of things. And it's just, you'll connect.
Right. It's funny you say that, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years. When you go to dinner with dentists, there's not a lot of listening. Talk about why the listening component is so important. And without throwing people under the bus, I think it's critical what you're saying, you know, because let's just say this, it's not so much about egos. Sometimes clinicians, they're just not open to anything. That's the first of all, you got to open up your brain. Then you got to open up your ears to what you just said. Why is the listening part so hard for dentists?
Well, it's not just dentists. I mean,
right.
You and I could be talking about marriage right now, right? Sure. So, you know, how are you going to have a good marriage? Well, you're going to listen.
Right.
And it's just the communication. I had this discussion actually with a colleague friend about a non-dental topic this weekend. And when you look at how we perceive the world, we cannot make, and this is a Bateson idea as well, we cannot make sense of the world unless there's a difference in it to be appreciated. You know, it's very simple, light, dark, you know, you can't appreciate dark unless you have some kind of comparison.
Right.
Our eyes are meant to evaluate difference. Our sense of touch is about difference. So we have to have difference in order to perceive. So if the modus of any individual is to simply retract into their world and do what they do, you know, there is no difference. So there is no growth. There is no ability to perceive or observe correctly. Listening is just, you know, it's just part of that. It's just part of the observation process. And really, I mean, what's the point of working with somebody if you're not going to listen to them and understand how they process information? You'll never be able to communicate with them. I'm always impressed at the ability of the orthodontist to accept what they get back from the oral surgeon when it comes to orthognathic surgery. And I think maybe that's why a lot of orthodontists don't like referring for orthognathic surgery, because they don't want to have to deal with the outcomes. Orthognathic surgery is very difficult. It's not the most precise of surgeries. I try extremely hard to be as precise as I can be. And we do pretty well at it. We've improved through the years. But what's going on then is a failure for the orthodontist to turn around and go to the oral surgeon and say, you know, what you gave back to me wasn't what I expected to get back. So there's a fear here. First, the orthodontist is being vulnerable, saying his mind in fear of what the ego might lash back on the orthodontist. And the surgeon, so as to not feel like they've done something wrong, will come back and say, well, I didn't do anything wrong. And in many ways, that's true. Like, the surgeon didn't do anything wrong. The analysis is, well, could we have done better, really? And what's missing is in that discussion then is the orthodontist and the oral surgeon saying, okay, how can we do better? All right, this is not the outcome we desired. What happened here? So my teams that I enjoy working with, you know, I can send videos and say, you know, your number three is too distally rotated. And so your distal buccal cusp is really slamming into the buccal of my lower molar. It's making it really difficult for me to get the bite together. And this is something that you do every time we prep for surgery. Can we take a look at your bands? Can we take a look at the prescription you're using? Can we take a look at the bracket placement, for example? And people I love working with are like, oh yeah, let's take a look at that. I don't want that to happen anymore. Let's figure that out. And the same thing too. I hand something back to the orthodontist and they're like, you know, I don't like what you did here. Well, let me analyze how that happens and let me give you something better. I mean, that just sounds more fun. I mean, doesn't that sound more fun to you to have that kind of communication instead of,
absolutely.
Oh my gosh, this is terrible. My oral surgeon's awful, but yet I'm going to send him another case and never talk to him about it and have an ulcer, you know, my whole life. It's hard to do, but when we do it, it's so rewarding.
I love this. I have I'm not kidding. I probably have 12, 13 more questions, and I know I only get you for a limited amount of time. I'm going to have you back and we'll cover another subject. I want you to talk about this, the course that you and Becca have on November 11th through the 13th. This is going to be a 3-day course. Mm-hmm. Where is it? What are you guys doing? And what am I going to learn when I come out there? And can I bring my specialist with me or my GP with me?
Heck yeah. So, you can bring anybody. It's funny. I love it when the dental assistants show up or even the hygienists, because there's some hygienists out there that can pick up sleep disorders better than any dentist or any physician ever could. You know, they're in there cleaning the mouth. They can put the patient back and they hear, you know, oh, something's wrong here. Let's take a look at these teeth. And they know what's going on. So this kind of course is for everybody, because what it's done is it takes this idea of functional facial keys, breathing, eating, communicating, and shows how function affects development and then how development affects function. So what we have is we have the benefit of Becca, who watches these kids grow and watches them grow incorrectly and is able to identify these dysfunctional patterns in kids. And so we see not only how can we identify them at a younger age to intervene to have a better result, but we also see what that intervention does for them as they get older. And then on my side, because I operate people who are done growing, I see all the compensations as they emerge. You know, how are all these dysfunctions throughout youth and teen years affecting the adult face? How are the lips changing? What are the aesthetic changes and how can we overcome them? So the course really is to look at growth and development and function together so that we can identify the problems earlier. And at the same time, understanding that, then it will also help us dictate how we treat the adult patient, how we decompensate, how we restore, how we, you know, give them back what they've destroyed through the years or altered through the years. It's a very comprehensive course. We treat it from the standpoint of you know, transverse problems, class two problems, vertical problems. How do these things develop? How do we identify them? How do we solve them early? And how do we solve them later? So very exciting.
Yeah. Where's the course? Please say Santa Barbara. where are you hosting the course at?
Next time. We'll alternate, but first round up in Seattle.
Okay. Awesome. So if you're listening to the podcast right now, you can go right down to the show notes. You're going to see our writers put a link in there. You can go directly to where you can register for the course. And again, bring everybody, bring a hygienist, bring a great team, or anyone that's curious about learning more about this. This is truly one of the most important topics in dentistry, I have no doubt. And when you talk about, there's people out there that fix teeth and there are people that change lives. Those are two different ways to practice. And what a great opportunity to really set yourself apart. I'll ask you this one last question, because I had Jim McKee on a couple of weeks ago, who I love. Yeah. And Jim, I mean, he's going to listen to this. So, I mean, he's got to be the worst marketer ever. I actually, you know, if you Google him, you can't find his website. Like, I even joke that I don't even think you're a real dentist. I just think you're just a crazy smart dude. And he's like, Kirk, I don't have to market. Would you agree with his statement? Like, once you get really good at something, people find you. He has all of these cases that come to him, TMD, TMJ. And most dentists in the Chicago area go, no, these are crazy patients. He's like, no, they're not. Like, this is a problem I've been called to fix. Would you agree with that statement when it comes to dentistry and getting good at something?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. So I have a bit of experience in this. I had a wonderful a person that I knew who was responsible for establishing one of the largest forums in dentistry. I'm trying to be a little vague here on purpose, but the forum was established because the person that established it wanted to know how to best navigate the world of dentistry to get the best result. And in talking to that person and their experience with the forum that they were running, and in my experience with how some of my patients end up where they end up, it's not fun being a patient. I mean, that's the take-home message. Mm-hmm. How do you discover where to go for the best treatment? It's really difficult. And I'm telling you, you know, Yelp is a disaster. Forums can be a disaster as well. So when it comes to marketing, there are dentists who market extremely well. And on the surface, I would say, wow, you know, that's a dentist that I want to really go to. But having worked with them and understand their philosophies, not somebody I would want to really work with or send patients to. Wow. Then they're the, like you say, the more quiet guys who or gals who are not, I guess, in the face of social media, et cetera. Like, for example, like you said, Jim. But heck, I'll send anybody from that part of the world to Jim. So I think it's easier for us as professionals to figure out who those people are. I really will say, though, that is for patients, it's awfully difficult to navigate the flim-flam against the real world experiences and results that one can get. So I tell my patients, second, third, fourth consults, I'm often sending patients, like after they see me in consultation for jaw surgery, you need to go see this particular jaw surgeon who is completely opposite in his philosophy and approach to what I do. But you need to understand what you're getting.
Right.
And you can choose him. That's fine. Just understand the two philosophies, then you can make a good choice and a decision. I digressed a little bit there, but I think as far as your practice, the first thing that we all need to concentrate on is being better clinicians, and the rest becomes easier when we are the better clinicians, like you said.
Yeah.
So yeah, you don't have to pour all that money into having an influencer mention your name on Instagram.
For sure. For sure. Well, I'm so grateful to get you on our show for the first time. And I want to have you back and cover some other topics. But if you're listening, I'm going to encourage you to check out Dr. Gunson's course with Dr. Bacow on November 11th through the 13th. And they're going to do that in Seattle. So the link will be down in the show notes. Also, check out what Dr. Gunson does at Spear Education. It's fabulous. You'll absolutely enjoy it.
I'm sorry, I'm going to interject just about the Spear. Please. So you, that is available to anybody. So you can go on Spear, and we have our interdisciplinary actually course where Rebecca and I talk about growth and development and about how to identify diagnostically patients that have problems. And we talk about treatment. And so Rebecca and I do the first day, and then Jim and Greg do the second day. So you have the periodontist and the restorative dentist doing the second day, where it becomes more of a micro approach. You know, how do we handle the teeth? How do we handle the aesthetic zone? So it was a nice melding of those two things. It's a 2-day course, interdisciplinary care at Spear. That's as much as we can do in a day, Rebecca and I, but it's fantastic. There's a ton of information. The feedback is always, you hit us with a fire hose. You need to slow down, you know, but I mean, that's the way that course is. It's kind of like, here's what you could know, you know?
So. Yeah. It's a great way to get your fire lit around a very important topic. So
yeah,
I'm so pumped to have you on today. So thank you very much for joining us. So stick around. Yeah, I'm going to have you back. This is called voluntolding. Like, you'll come back, right?
Anytime.
Okay, so Becca says that all the time. So I'm like, so we got a yes. So that's awesome. So, hey guys, I'll say this. Stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. Thank you guys for listening to the Best Practices Show. If you enjoyed today, which I know you did, just do us a favor, hit the share button, share this with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you guys want to see on the show. I'm trying to line up all the Spear faculty for everything that you guys are recommending, and we're doing them one at a time. I'd love to know what you want to hear from Dr. Gunson. I'll line him up and ask him the questions, because I certainly can't answer them. I can ask them, but he can answer them as best we know. And until we see you guys next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.